First, 1990, Joe Saint interviewing William Fuller, better known as Bill Fuller, on his recollections of his early life. Joe is interviewing Bill Fuller again. Once again, we're getting started. Bill is going to talk about his early life.
Well, my early life was a great life when I was young in London, England, at Walthamstow. My father and mother were married in India. They were all army people. My mother was a Powell of the way back of the army people. The Powells are all army people. Way back of an uncle, a great uncle way back, was Sir Baden Powell of that family. And my aunt, the only aunt I had, Aunt Annie, was married to a colonel, Colonel Webb, in the Indian Army. And my father was a drum major in the Army in India. But he got transferred from India to Ireland in around the 1900s. And two of my brothers were born in Ireland, and he was made a drum major in the Connaught Rangers in Ireland. But then he took sick, and he had cancer, and he died in London Hospital in about 1904, I think it was. And I used to go up to see him at Whip's Cross Infirmary in London when I was just a little lad. I was only 6 years old then. It was 1905, not 1904. He died in 1905. And my oldest brother, Fred, was only 16. And my only sister, the youngest of the family, was only 6 months old. And there were six of us in the family. And father not having the full 20 years in the army, wasn't entitled to a pension. He just lacked a year or so from being 20 years in the army. So mother didn't have a cent of anything for to live on once the funeral and everything was over. And she didn't know what to do. So the minister of the church we went to, the Anglican church, suggested that my oldest brother go to sea, and he went to sea on a merchant ship. And my second oldest brother, George, went to a naval training school in Yarmouth in England. And my other brother went to a training school, Alf. Walter and I was seven, and Walter was nearly five, and I was nearly eight. We were put in Dr. Bazzara's home in Stepney Causeway in London. And I remember the day we were going across the vacant lot at the end of the street, and I said to Mother, "Where are we going, Mum?" And she said, "Well, I'm taking you to a new home." I said, "I don't want to go to a new home. I want to stay where we are." But we got down to Dr. Bazzara's home in Stepney Causeway, and I guess I got contrary and wouldn't go in. But they made me go in, and it was a terrible place. It's a rough place, at Stepney, a very rough place in the east end of London. But I got in there, and I don't know how long I stayed there, and my brother Walter. But 2 or 3 days after that, they shipped me to a place called Shepherd's Bush in London. And I was there. I didn't like that. I was always wanting to get home. And on a Saturday morning, after being there for about 2 weeks, I went out to the park, the Victoria Park in London, with the nurses, and I watched my chance, and I ran away on a Saturday morning. And I was gone all day in London. I didn't have anything to eat. I hadn't gone to the bathroom or the toilet. And it come dark, and I didn't know what to do, but I saw a sign on a building that said police station. So I went in there and I told them I was lost. And they said, well, where do you live? Where'd you come from? And I told them, from Walthamstow. And they couldn't understand how in the world I got from Walthamstow in London that length of time. And I said, well, I've been walking for a long time. And I told them that anyway, they sent my mother. And my mother arrived about 9 or 10 o'clock that night. And she told them the truth, that I was belonged to the doctor of the powder home at Shepherd's Bush. So I landed back there. And for punishment the next day, the woman made me scrub a floor with a scrubbing brush and a bucket of water. And I was only 7 years old, and I didn't know what a scrubbing brush was, or a pail of water. And I got it done, and she looked at it and she said, you missed that corner, do it all over again. And anyway, I done it all. Then a week after that, we got notice that they were shipping us out into the country to live with some old people. And they shipped us out to a place called Ballinton Common in Buckinghamshire, just a little tiny village of about 75 people. And we lived there for till 1914, about 5 years. And it was a wonderful place, just outside of Great Missenden. And we lived with them till the First World War was declared. And as soon as the August the 14th in 1914, they said, you're going to Canada. And we were all delighted to go to Canada. I hadn't seen my mother or any of my brothers that from the time we went into the home for those 5 years till the afternoon that I left to get on the boat to go London docks, Tilbury docks in London, where we sailed from. And we landed in Quebec City 13 days. And two warships came out with us for the first 2 days. Then we were on our own. And we went the north route to Miss Submarine. And we could get down as far as Quebec City those days, as far as the big boat could come. It wasn't deep enough for the rest of the way. And I landed in Toronto. And there were 700 on board ship of boys. And on the old Carinthia, a Gurnard Lion, and it was sank about 6 months afterwards by submarine. But anyway, when we got to Toronto, my brother had a place out in the country here, and I had to stay in Toronto on 52 Peter Street, Toronto, at the home there. And I waited and waited there for about a month for to get a place someplace near my brother. And it was like being put in jail. I was there by myself, and there was just nothing but brick wall all around the yard. And I knew nobody, and I'd never been parted. Walter and I, who was younger than me, 3 years, had never been parted. And gosh, I felt lonesome. Well, anyway, at last, I got notice that I was coming to Bradford. This was in October 1914. Well, I came to Bradford on a Saturday morning, October, around the first week or so, I don't know just what day. And it was raining at Bradford when I got off the train, and nobody at the station to meet me. So I didn't know what to do, but a fellow by the name of Joe Scanlon was running the express then with a wagon and a horse. And he looked at me and he said, where are you going? And I said, well, I don't know where I'm going. I've got a name on my coat here where I'm supposed to go. And he looked at me and said, you better ride upstream with me on the wagon. And I got on his wagon, rode up to the main street, and the chief of police then was Bill Simpkins. And he looked at my coat and he said, you got to go out from the country here. So I went out to the country, and I got as far as Neshaw's Gate, that's just past the high school, and it still rained, and I sat down in the ditch, and I started to cry. And I thought, Alfred, well, this isn't going to do me any good. So I got up and went farther on, and I went to the farm where I was supposed to go, where McCann's lived. That's where Richie's lived afterwards, the big house that's being tore down, you know, the big house there. And I walked in there, and the dog came out at me, and I was a bit of a scared. And the woman come out, and she looked at me, and she said, "Well, young fella, what can I do for you?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, "I'm supposed to come to the farm here, out here someplace." And I said, "This is the name of the people." And she looked at it, well, she said, "This is the place. You better come on in. You're soaking wet." Pardon me. And she said, "Yes." And she said, "Are you hungry?" And I said, "Yes." So she went right into the house and got out a big dish and made up a pan of tea biscuits. And baked them. In about a half an hour, we had tea biscuits and applesauce. And I never eat anything so nice in all my life. I never forgot those tea biscuits and applesauce. And I went to Middletown School then for a little while, from then till Christmas.
Who was the teacher then, Billy?
Thelma Morris was the teacher then. She lived in town here, and she walked out to school every day. Tom Morris's daughter, you know, they lived up there.
Yeah.
Across the road from Germans, they lived up there, were on the big cement house where Germans lived there at one time. Ray J. German and them Germans. You remember where the Jewish people lived? Selkins?
Yeah.
They lived
Maxie
there.
Clarkson, yeah.
And old James lived there one time.
Yeah,
well, they lived there then,
yeah.
Germans. Uh-huh. And anyway, I stayed with McCann's then till I got married. And I lived in town. We moved off the farm. Wallace got killed overseas. Jack was at the army and he had his foot, half his foot blown off. He came back the day that Wallace left overseas in the First World War, and Wallace was killed, and Jack got a job on the railroad as a railway mail clerk, and he was there all his life after that. So they moved into on the hill where Teddy Peters and his wife lived. That's where Bob Evans lives now. That was the old Mark Scanlon homestead, Ab Scanlon's father's people. That was the old.
We refer to that as the Pines right now.
The Pines, yeah. Teddy Peters and his wife lived there before we lived there. But Teddy, I don't think you remember Teddy Peters. Not before.
That's no relation to these other Peters.
No relation whatsoever. They were an English couple.
Yeah.
They were great friends of E.P. Snow's, the harness people,
yeah.
Harness makers, yeah. And we moved there. And I used to peddle milk in town. We had the fairgrounds of the pasture field, and we had all those fields around. There was the Benrose lot across the road where Helen Bantam and Art Turner lived this last few years. And where the public school is today, we used to grow corn for the cows, and that we had cows and two team of horses. Where the new Catholic church is today, I planted a patch of raspberries, an acre and a quarter of raspberries, right where the Catholic Church, new Catholic Church is today. And, but it's all changed different now. And then, of course, up there where Max Lewis on Fletcher Avenue, there was a few acres on that farm that started to belong to this farm, where Max Lewis and I don't know whether it's Taylor. Not Taylor. The woman that used to make the candlestick.
Jackson,
yes.
Churches up in there,
that's
too.
That's right,
yeah.
And churches.
Yeah.
But church
and Evans is in
that's
there.
That's right. Along that road, there was quite a few acres there. I remember one time I grew some onions there, and we had the cows, and somebody left the gate open, and the cows eat the onions. And the next day when I peddled the milk, I got a complaint from all the customers that the milk tasted of onions. They'd all eaten turnips, the onion tops, and I didn't know it, and we didn't know it because somebody had chased them out of the field and shut the gate then. But anyway, then we used to pasture them in the old fairgrounds too.
Excuse me, that Bemrose that you referred to, is that any relation to that Max and Walter Bemrose that came in here and worked on the marsh?
No. This was, they had a store in town, just this side of the bank, on the corner of where the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce was, where the Uneeda Hotel was. That used to be afterwards Cunningham had a store there.
Then Bannerman's had it after that.
Yes, that's right, where Bannerman's are now. That was the Bemrose. There was one, they had one boy, Rosie Bemrose, we used to call him, Doug. He was one of the finest junior hockey players there ever was. Bradford had a real good junior hockey team in 1919. And then he went to play for a team called Orly. And Toronto Canoe Club in Toronto next year won the Junior Championship of Canada. They were just junior then. Once you were 21, don't matter. There was no junior A or B or C, it was just junior. And Bradford had a real good team that year in 1919. Yeah. Then I got married. May.
And, what year was that, Bill?
1923. Yeah. I worked on the marsh for Ben Collins when we put the wooden boots on the horses. And I worked for Ben for a couple of years there as old team. Then I worked in the factory for 9 years. Then I went on to the marsh.
That's Sam Sain's factory, the baby carriage factory.
That's right. Baby carriage and furniture factory. We built Chesterfields there and even fiber furniture. Yeah. Doll carriages and baby carriages. I was designing furniture at that time too. And I designed the furniture for the Honeydew stores, and they accepted my design at the Kitchener Furniture Show, and they bought for all their stores in Canada, restaurants. And then we got into the baby carriage, English prams, and I made up an English pram, and they sold so well that Mr. Stein, the owner of the Toronto Specialty, said to me one day, "Billy, what did you do with the English pram that we got?" And I said, "Well, it's in my stock room where all the patterns are." Well, he says, "You put that together and take it home." He says, "Your wife's going to have a baby, isn't she?" And I said, "Yes." And so I put it all together, and it was the finest pram you ever saw. I said, I could forget how many other families used that pram before it wore out, a lot of them anyway. So then when the depression come, I worked on the marsh for a year for Professor Day, and then Ralph Doan and I got together and we broke up the first 15 acres on this side in the big scheme in the county of Simcoe at Doan's Bridge at that time. That was the Fraser farm before that. Yeah. Yeah, the Fraser girl was one of the girls that taught school at Middletown.
Well, she taught school there too, did she?
She taught school there, and Joe Harvey taught school there, the local, and Jesse Fraser. There was Jesse Fraser and Una Fraser, and one boy, we used to call him Jock Fraser. And that was their farm. Now that first street there by Doan's Bridge is called Fraser Avenue, and that is named after the Frasers on that farm. Well, that's my experience up till the end of the marsh. Of course, I was on the marsh then, and then I stayed on the marsh. Then I got into the wholesale business, and then I got joined Thornton and the Thornton and Fuller, and then I established International Fruit Distributors and was with them for 9 years. And then I went and I bought the Loblaws as well at the same time, just the vegetables, no fruit or anything. Well, then I was in the co-op for 9 years, too,
I
went with International Fruit, and then I went back on my own in the turnip business. I stayed there till I retired. I was on the council two terms, and I was the director on the co-op in the first place, yeah. One of the provisional directors, I was.
Well, your brother Tom, he went to Australia, didn't he?
He went to Australia. He was the youngest. He was only 2 years old when I left home. Oh. And I never saw him again till I was the day before I left for England, for Canada in England. And you know, and the funny part of it was, when Tom come to Canada, I was standing in the doorway of the pool room where Brister's used to have on the corner. After supper one night, I was standing in the doorway and I saw this fella coming up the hill past Rusty Walker's Board Baker. And I forget who was standing there with me, and I said to him, said to him, "Gosh," I said, "if I didn't think that, that coming out there wasn't my brother, I don't know who it was." And I hadn't seen him in all those years. We were married then. And I looked at him and the way he was walking, and I hadn't seen him since he was 2 years old, well, since I left there. And he went past to the other side of the street, and I walked, got out on the street and watched him go up the street west, and I saw him turn up John Street, and I headed for home. I thought, well, gosh, he must be a force, the way he's acting, the way he's walking. And when I got to the house and it turned into the yard, he was at the back door rapping on the door, and that's who it was. And I hadn't seen him since he was two years old.
What age would he be then?
Not two.
What year would that be, Bill?
Well, we were married. Tom was just a... Wally was... Wait a minute now. What? Tom wasn't born. That would be about 19... 1925. Or 1925, 26. Yeah.
Where did the rest of your family go to then?
No, Fred went to sea. I was a merchant marine, and he was shoveling coal. Well, then he studied. He was always pretty smart at school. In fact, he won a scholarship in one of the schools when he was there. And he got to be first mate, second mate, first mate. Then he got to be captain on an oil tanker, SN Trindanian. Well, then he worked for the Gulf Refining Company, and they built a brand new big ship called the Gulf King. It was the biggest oil tanker on the ocean, and they hired him as captain of that. And he was captain of that, and he was on the sea for 46 years. And he retired, went back to England at a place called Woodhall Spa in Lincolnshire. He had a nice estate there. He had saved his money and bought a nice big property in Lincolnshire. That's where I'm going away for next week to stay for a couple of weeks in England. And he had one son, Gordon. That's where we're going. He has it now. And Fred retired, but then he got to be an American citizen because he worked for the American firm. And Gordon was born in England, but registered in the United States, so he was a dual nationality. But he couldn't join the American Army, but he joined the American forces somehow. He was an electrical engineer, and they sent him down to British Guiana to move a radio station in from the coast back in about 5 miles during the war. Well, then he got a job with the International Airways Communications in Jamaica. That's the United States, Canada, England, and Jamaica. They was the company, and he was with them until he retired a few years ago, and he's back in there. So he did very well. And then Walter, the one that went on the farm, he had a bad place. He didn't have a good place. And I went over to see him the first time after we come, the first year. I saddled up the horse on a Sunday afternoon, and Mr. McCann said to me, "You want to go and see your brother?" And I said, "Yes." I hadn't seen him at all since we left England. After we got to Cora, I went to see him. And I was quite happy to go and see him. And when I got there, I said, "Well, to Walter, how are you doing? How do you like it?" He said, "Terrible."
Where was this, Bill?
Oh, well, I can't mention any names.
Oh.
There are people, they've got people living in town here yet. And I said, "Well," he said, "you know," he was only nine. Uh-huh. And the woman said to him when he got out of the horse and buggy, they'd been about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He hadn't had a bite to eat all day, and I hadn't gone to the toilet. And when he got out of the buggy, she looked at him, she said, "Well," she said, "you're no size. Are you any good? Can you work?" And he didn't know what to say. She said, "Here, take this broom and sweep that veranda off. Let me see if you know what work means." She never even asked him his name. Was he hungry? Did he want to go to the bathroom? And he said, Now, he was there for 7 years till I took him away from them. And never once in all those years did he ever sit at the table to eat a meal with them. He waited till after they were through, or else he sat in the woodshed to eat his dinner or meal. No, that's what. Anyway, I took him away, and he worked on the farm, two farms out here. He worked for Ben Rogers for a while, and for Lorne Hartman. Then in the fall, I sent him to Trotter, and he got a job in a plating company, and I sent him to High School of Commerce in West Trotter at nights. And he was there for quite a while, all one with us. And the Prudential Life Insurance Company man come along to the principal and said, have you got a fella you could recommend to come to our office? And he said, yes, I've got one, a good fella, I'll recommend him. So it was my brother, Walter. And he went down to 720 on Bathurst Street to a building there. And after 2 years being there, they made him manager. And then when they built the big new building downtown, they moved him down there, and he was manager with them down there for 43 years. And he's still living in Barrie today, up on in that Park Grove home, that big home northeast of in Barrie, a beautiful home there. He's still there. He was there all them years. And his daughters, he had two daughters. One is married to Bill Thompson. That is, I think he's a relief officer for the county of Simcoe.
Oh, yeah.
The other daughter married a fellow by the name of Woody Widget, and they own the Powertrain Services Limited. They manufacture rear ends and transmissions and axles for high-powered machinery, and they have a big factory in Brampton. And now Woody has been dead for some years, Shirley, that was her name, Shirley Ford, before he married. She had four boys, and they're all married now, and they're all in the business. And she run the business till they got big enough. They're all married, and they're now between 25 and 40 years of age. And they're running the business, and they have a big business in Brampton. They own a big factory there, and they have quite a lot of land right in the middle of Bramley. So they're all doing well. They all did well. You might say we all did exceptional well. And I sent for my mother and my sister, and they came out together.
Oh, your mother and sister's here, I never knew that.
Oh, yes, they lived with me for quite a while, Joe. Mother lived with me for 3 years when Tommy was a baby in the carriage.
Oh, I don't remember that.
When Tommy was only in a baby carriage, she used to walk from in this baby carriage that I said this time, and she used to walk from Bradford to, you know where that fella used to sell the corn at the garage at the top of the other side of the hall land?
Oh, yeah.
The schoolhouse is, yeah. They called it Sand.
Poplar Bank Schoolhouse?
That's right.
Yeah.
There. She used to push that baby carriage and go for a walk, clean to there and back. And my mother would say to his mother, where in the world have you been? And she said, well, just for a little walk to take that. And one day, Professor Day was coming home, and he saw this woman push the baby carriage, and he drove down the road, and he stopped, and he watched her. And when he got to the marsh, Tom was working for Professor Day, and he says, you know, Tom, I saw the funniest thing today. He said, I saw a little old woman pushing a baby carriage up a home on Landing Hill. Just a little woman. And he said, you should see her go. And Tom said, you know who it was? He says, no, I don't know. Well, he said, that was my mother. Oh, he says, I can't believe that. Tom says, yes, that's who it was. Isn't that something? Hey?
Boy, them English people could really walk, couldn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the kid's thinking nothing. Well, I'll tell you, when she moved to Connor, she used to work from Lee Avenue, that's way down by the Woodbine Waystack, to the exhibition grounds and back.
Oh, was it great?
She didn't think nothing of it.
Yeah?
She's done it several times.
Hmm. When you worked on the marsh, who'd you work with, Ben Collins? Or?
On the hay?
Yeah,
hay. With Ben.
What were you doing then? Just baling hay the same as
baling hay? Well, I was driving team, most of the country, and I.
Oh, yeah.
And I had the team of horses, so it was right over here, you know.
And the gang that was working with you in that?
Well, there was Big Jack Armstrong, and there was Bill Kite. I don't know if you remember
Bill Kite,
tonight.
Yeah.
West Kite. And there was Watson, you know, from Hong Landing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him.
We used to call him Boy Watson.
Yeah.
Big Boy Watson. His mother lived down the other end of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Bill Parks worked with us, and Rooster McKinstry. And, it was quite a gang. And I worked for Dan Collins, too, one summer.
Oh, yeah.
We built the wharf that year. You know, what makes me laugh is these fellas all arguing about the wharf down there.
Yeah.
The town bought that wharf on the other side in King some time ago. But I have been down to that wharf at the river a year or so ago when the people that had the marina there tried to tell us there'd be no business being on there, that they owned it, and we were fishing there. And Dan Collins had the contact of building the wharf, and I worked all summer drawing gravel out of Tom Brown's gravel pit and putting the plank on the top and graveling it from just over the railroad track, around the bend, and over to the wharf, and putting the new top on the gravel. Now, it took us all summer long with two team of horses doing the gravel, and I knew exactly where the lines were and everything where we had the gravel. And they were talking to the wrong fella then, because I knew, and I said, go on now, and I said, I know exactly where that. Well, all right, but he said, we don't let everybody fish here.
You know, he told
me
the same.
They have bought that now, I understand, the council has.
He told me the same thing. I was there once, and I said, well, I said, you're full. And he said, well, how do you know? Well, I said, my dad put the new top on this thing in about, for the government, federal government, in about
1919, after the post office. Yeah.
When he did the post office, then he didn't get in on the contract with Art Saints, you see.
Yeah.
So then Earl Rowe gave him this other as a cushy job afterwards because he didn't get in the first year. So then dad put the new top on it. And I think they hauled gravel at that time from the same pitch you're talking about.
Yeah, Tom Brown.
And I think Campbell's had some horses on it and different ones had horses.
Dan had two team of horses and I drew gravel, and I never had such a hot job. You get shoveling gravel in the middle of August, July and August in a pit. Wind or anything, a real hot weather like Saturday. There.
I know, I've been down in there.
Well,
that was about 1937 or 38, I think, when Dad put that new top on it.
This was in 1919.
Yeah. Did you ever remember when we were kids and that they used to have what they called a winter road that went across through from what they called DeSette Street? I think Collie called it McLean's Lane.
From where?
From DeSette Street or McLean's Lane up past Bales's house and across the river over the railway, just above the Jigger House, across the river to Queensville. Do you remember that winter road that used to be in there in the wintertime? That'd be in the 30s.
Listen, it wasn't only in the wintertime, it was in the summertime. That's the way we went up to work, to cut hay. We went up through the up alongside of the river to the line of Tizzards, and then right on back to Martin Dew's Corner.
That's the one.
And from Martin Dew's Corner, we took the federal road right straight north till we hit the river. And we used to leave the horses there sometimes for the week at a time, and come home Saturday at noon and put them in the stable, look after them, and take them back on the scow on a Monday morning. Now, that was in the summertime as well as the wintertime.
Yeah.
Yes, but it wasn't a public road.
No, it wasn't a public road. It was just a private road. Well, I
remember the Sunday morning that Martin Dew's house burned down over on that corner.
Yeah.
That's just as you're making the turn to go to Queensville off of Federal Side Road.
That's right.
Street now, you know.
Yeah. Well, you see, Martin Dew, before he went over there, he lived in that house where across from Dan Colmes on Colburn Street there, where Lauren Church bought it from Martin Dew when Martin Dew went, before he went over into Kent.
Yeah, that's where churches were.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aikens lived there. No, Aikens lived beside him at one time.
Did he?
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Aikens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
And Campbell lived on the corner at one time.
Yeah.
Al Campbell, mm-hmm. You know, Dorothy Campbell's father.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever remember anything that somebody was asking me the other day, something about the old guy that made Swamp Whiskey? Do you ever remember any of the stories?
Tom Watson?
Tom Watson and...
Tom was a good fella.
And Tom...
Tom used to grow cucumbers at the Hollow Landing for me, and he used to have a bunch of women picking them, and he used to fetch them into the warehouse for me, slices, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Tom used to tell me the stories. He said, you know, they cooked up half them stories just to get him to put into jail to go up to Burwark. But you wouldn't want to meet a nicer fellow than Tom Watson.
And old Tom Foster.
Tom Foster,
yeah.
Yeah, they made
really
that bridge after him, you know.
Yeah.
He lived in that cement house right on the corner there on the landing plains as you're going into it off of the road going to Queensville, that old cement house. It's gone now, and now it's a beautiful brick house.
Okay.
But the bridge is still called the Tom Foster Bridge.
Yeah, the Tom Foster Bridge.
Yeah.
He was a character old Tom was.
Oh,
he used to cut hay in that on the river, too.
He was a good fella.
Yeah.
He was a good fella.
Most of those guys over there, they were really good. They had a kind of a rough reputation, but it was just another trade to them. That's all it was.
Sure.
Your way of making a bit of money.
Well, Tom wouldn't do anybody any harm.
No. Right. He had a good reputation all over the police force in the city of Toronto.
And in Burwash.
Yeah. Yeah, he used to, I know once there in later life when I talked to him in the hotel, that he said he used to go to Burwash every winter because he got free room and board. And they swap whiskey for the boys, the guards and that.
That's what he told me. He said they nailed him purposely just to get him up there.
Yeah. He said they reserved his bedroom for the next.
But he said he had a great time up there. He liked them. They all liked him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Tom was a good fella.
Yeah, Tom was a heck of a good head.
Yeah.
And the Grahams and that, too. So.
Yeah.
I remember once with... I was fishing with Ben Collins at the mouth of the river. That'd be about 1931, 32.
I used to draw fish for Ben in the back of the fish company.
Yeah.
To Toronto.
And we were fishing there, and it was Easter time, and Bev said to me, he said, don't you go home to Bradford. He said, you stay with me. I got a little job for you to do when old Ben goes. So anyway, after old Ben took off, he said, get a pair of hip rubber boots on. So I said, where are we going? None of your business, he said, and we started to walk.
Yeah.
We headed southeast. Got down there, going down through this long hay, and he with about a size 10 rubber boots on, and they only wore about a 6 or something. But anyway, he said, we're getting closer, and every once he'd put a nose in the air, and he'd be sniffing, and I couldn't figure out what he was doing.
You know,
he wouldn't tell me what he was doing or what he was
doing.
Who
was it?
Bev Woodcock.
Oh, Bev, yeah.
And so anyway, we're getting closer, and I couldn't smell nothing. The hay was pretty up to my head and that. So anyway, he said, he said, we're right close. So anyway, we come along, this thing was all covered up with trees and that. And then they had one of those four-burner Coleman gas stoves.
Yeah.
And then that, and he had the...
Dolman worm and everything.
Yeah, Dolman worm and everything else. And he said, oh, yes, he said, they're really working. And so he said, now, he said, just keep going around the circle, getting a bigger and bigger circle. And finally, I was going around, and I said, well, here's a bottle. That's what we're looking for, he said. So it was a gallon jug. And he said, well, one's no good to it. So we got, and finally we got four of them, and then we headed back.
It's on tape.
Yeah, it's on tape, this story. And so then we headed back, and Bev got into it, and he got sniffing on her, and drinking, and going back. And by the time we got back, I think he had a good chunk of 1 gallon gone, and he was in bad shape. So he said to me, you get out and hide this stuff, and hide it good, so old Ben don't find it.
Ben was deaf against it.
So Ben come up on Monday morning, there was Bev still booped out, and oh, did he give me the devil because I didn't look after him. Oh, God. He said, where is the booze? Because he said, there must be somewhere around. And I said, well, I don't know where it is. Bev hid it, and I said, I don't know, and he wouldn't let me talk. He said, I'll beat you if he don't, I'll beat you. But anyway, Bev sobered up, and we went to work fishing in the morning. But that was a long, long.
day then.
Well, I tell you, that was an awful job about fishing. I went up there one time, and it was 17 below zero, and I had a load of fish on in the tank. Al Hounson was driving for me. And we had to go to our house, and Ben come with us. And we put every pot and pan and everything else on the stoves and cold wall stoves and everything to get hot water and warm it down, to warm up the water so the fish wouldn't freeze before we got to the Bradford Fish Company on Spadina Avenue in Toronto. And when we unloaded the splashing of the fish and everything, we were just like icemen. It froze on us as soon as it hit us. We had to break it off before we could get into the truck to come home and get a bit of thawed out. It took us all day long. That was the moment. We went right up the river with a great big load of fish and water and that, you know, and that was an awful job. You go to put on the bait and water, you know.
Yeah. Well, that was the same weekend, just before Bev really got too drunk then. He happened to look over towards Bradford and there was a great big flames going.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll bet you, he said, that's George Bannett has burned his house down. He's making swamp whiskey up there at the hill back at the public school. And he said, I'll bet you he burned the house down. And
well,
when he came in on Monday, Ben came in on Monday morning. Ben said, yeah, said about places. Bev said, still drunk as he was, he said, yeah, I told you, he said, Ben.
Remember the paper by the name of Lindsay that was relation to George Bennett that came from up around? They came from over near Lindsay. Archie Saint and them used to knock around with one of the girls. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where the Bennetts went back to when they left Bradford.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, they were quite a character. They were.
And you said then Bill Simpkins, the policeman.
Yeah.
Well, who took over after Bill Simpkins?
Jim Webb.
Well, Jim Webb came in then, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, didn't Bill Simpkins live in that little house up there on Moore Street there?
He lived right there where across the road from Dodgers, right south.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Corner.
Yeah, the right
across the road from Andy Belfie.
Yeah, in the southwest corner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. That's where I thought he lived.
And then down on the next
corner.
He had
no family, did he?
The next corner was George Simpkins.
George Simpkins, yeah. And they were two brothers, right?
That's right. He was in the plumbing business.
Plumbing and tinsmith.
Tinsmith.
Yeah.
George Manton worked for him. And
George Manton. Ted Gaff worked for him.
Yeah, and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was down on next
that's
to the old bake shop there.
That's right.
Yeah.
They were down there next to the Bradford Witness at one time was in that.
That's right, yeah.
Hose Wilkerson used to be upstairs at the tailor shop.
Oh, that's where Hose Wilkerson was, up there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Upstairs, up above.
Oh.
George Ogilvie was up above Gardner's.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, George Ogilvie made my wedding suit, $50. Brand new blue serge.
Blue serge.
I wore for about 20 years and it got too so shiny I was ashamed to wear it anymore, but it was a good suit. It took half the money I owned to buy that suit, $50.
He used to employ, what, about four, five, six people in there, didn't he?
Well, I don't know how many. He had some, and he always wore corsets.
Oh, he always wore corsets?
Yeah, he always wore corsets. Straight, tall, and he had a little mustache and glasses. Oh, he was just a splay.
He was the brother Dave Overy.
Yes, yeah. Dave owned the livery stable.
Yeah. Well, he lived down on John Street there, didn't he?
He lived right on that frame house where Ed McVitie lived, just right near there.
Oh, yeah.
I know, they burnt down.
No,
then they moved
there.
Across the road.
Yeah, that's right. And then Dave Overy went into that
Hurley place. Hurley Hayes went in there.
Yeah, that's right. And the corner right next to it was, we called the Commons, the fairground, or the lot. Playground back at the town, huh?
Yeah.
He had no family, did he?
Who?
George Ogilvie.
I don't think he was married.
Well, then who lived with him? His sister?
I don't know who lived with him.
Maybe
he was married, but he had no family.
Uh-huh. It seemed to me as though, didn't he, after he left there, didn't he walk into that little house across that you're talking about, across from Bill Simpkins, where Belfry is now?
Oh, I don't know. He may have.
He might have went up, either him or his sister went up in there afterwards.
Okay. I think going back a long time ago.
Yeah.
70 years ago.
These Scanlons, now you were talking about the Scanlons there.
Yes.
That's really an old name around here.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the old time settlers.
Scanlons and the Crooks.
Yeah.
Greg Crooks' father.
Yeah. You remember him?
So, little.
Greg Crooks' father?
No, I don't.
Oh, I do. Galenian Cook. He used to have a. You know where the vet is now?
Yeah.
Well, he used to be in there.
Well, that's where Collie had a shop for a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
They used to have a music store in there. They sold gramophones and pianos and organs.
Oh.
We bought our piano from him.
Oh, yeah.
Olive still got it. Yeah.
Well, then Fred McKay, he was running an organ business down over top of the drugstore, wasn't he?
Well, he had a pool room.
Yeah, pool room, and I thought he had a gramophone, and I thought Art Saints used to make the cases for him.
Well, I don't know. He used to sell them.
Yeah.
Edmund K was quite the guy.
Him and working with Tom C. Floyd Fisher up there in the skating rink. When was the skating rink built?
1912.
1912, yeah.
13 and 12. Jack McCann was the first man to go up and put the first big beam up the
oak. Oh, the first arch.
Yeah, first arch.
Oh, yeah.
The only man they could get to go up with the rope on.
Oh.
Just before the war, between 12 and 13.
Oh, yeah.
Tomsey was quite the guy. You remember old man Broomhead?
Yeah. What's
him and Tomsey used to get on the street and they get in an argument.
Well, you live in that house. Well, you live next to Fred Cook's there, Jack Cook's there.
Yeah. Fred Cook used to get them going, too.
Yeah. There was one fellow there, little Joey Scanlon. He lived up back of the public school there when he came in off the park.
That was...
Joey, wasn't it?
That was... what do you call Scanlon? He went on the express. That's the fellow that I got the light up from the first day I got up from George Green, Bob Green, from the grocery store on the corner. That's where the express was, right on the corner under the Masonic Hall. And Bob Green run a grocery store there, and George Green, and then they had the insurance and the clerk of the town back in there.
That's where Percy Stevenson worked for him.
That's right.
Who took over after, there was another Busby, wasn't there a Busby was in on the mail?
Busby? Busby, yeah, Jack.
Jack Busby.
There was Jack Busby and Jack Busby, the two boys. Busby. John and Jack. John and Cack. We called him Cack. I don't know what his first name was. We'll always call him Cack anyway. John belonged to our Bible class. There was Grantham. There was Grantham, Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Fred Owens and Busby. Earl Breeden. Fred and Jack Cook. The three Gaps. Jack, Harry, and Ted. Myself. The two Webbs.
What two Webbs?
Jim and George.
Oh, yeah.
There was two Hardings, Reg and Happy and Reg, and there was 20 of us.
Oh.
And we were going to the Bible class, too, after I was married.
Oh.
Miss Morton. Do you remember George Morton?
Yes, sister, she taught me in Sunday school.
Well, she was our Sunday school teacher then. She taught me in Bible class.
Then after
she was
her,
a wonderful woman.
Then after her was Sarah Battle come in.
Who?
Sarah Battle.
Oh, yeah.
She came in after old Sarah.
Yeah. Well,
oh, yeah, that Miss Morton, she was an awfully nice
woman.
Oh,
she was a wonderful
woman. She was a wonderful woman.
You know, she made the biggest mistake in my life, and I didn't know it, and I should have done it. She used to think the world of me, too. And when Wallace was born and he was being baptized, I didn't have brains enough to say, do you want to be her Wally's godmother? And I know she wanted it to be. She afterwards said she told somebody, and she was disappointed, and Wally never had one.
Oh.
I never thought of it, never dreamt of it, but two years afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a wonderful person.
Yeah. Oh, I was sorry afterwards, I didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, the Greens were around here for a long time.
Which one?
George Green and his father.
Oh, yeah. The two girls, Ray and Mary.
Yeah. I don't know whether Ray's still living or not.
Who? Ray.
I don't know whether Ray's still living or not.
No, Ray died.
She died.
That's the oldest one.
Yeah.
And Mary died.
And Mary died, yeah. Yeah.
They're all dead, the Greens. You know who I thought was dead was John Creighton, but he isn't.
No, John's not dead yet, no.
No. I was asking one of the, girls.
Dewhurst?
Dewhurst girls. Yeah. And
they still have their cottage. He still has a cottage up there, Stony Point, is it, or up in there? Yeah, Detroit.
Yeah.
And I've been in there a couple of times, but he's never been there when I've been around.
Stony Point, same thing.
Yeah, the same thing, yeah. Gardner's had a cottage up there, too. The Reynolds, the Gardner's.
Not Helen Brown. Granny Wood.
And there was a Bowles up in there, had the cottage there too, Reynolds's, Stevenson's.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, he was born and raised in Bradford, wasn't he, Ben Collins?
Ben, yeah, sure, in that house there with Jim Armstrong was. That was the old, Collins' original home.
Ernie Collins, that's what we called Ernie, wasn't it? Wasn't his father Ernie?
No, Ernie was the brother to Ben and Dan.
Oh.
Big Ernie. And little Ernie was Mutz and Bruce's father.
Collie's brother.
Yeah. Big Ernie was the father of Teddy Carroll. Peter's family, except
Doris,
Bill,
oh.
And the oldest girl. The rest were all.
Oh yeah.
That's how they got that.
The Peters Marsh.
That's right.
Yeah, up in the Dent Valley.
Ernie owned all that.
Oh yeah.
You see, I lived with Collins's for about 3 or 4 years.
That's what I thought you lived. Yeah.
I boarded. I worked for Dan for 2 years, driving team. And then I got a job in the winter time at Stein's, and they asked me to stay all the time.
Right.
So I made a deal with Edna. My board was $7 a week, and she did my washing and ironing and mending, and I milked her cow every night and morning. Everybody had a cow there.
Yeah.
He had a cow, and Saints had a cow, and Ben had a cow, and Davies had two or three cows.
Dave Ogilvie had cows.
There must have been about 20 cows in town then, Ben.
Mike Saint had a cow.
Yeah, Mike Saint had one. They had them in the Zet property.
Yeah, and Fred Stock Field there, the railway track.
Yeah, that's right.
Who was Dan's wife?
Well, Dan's wife was a sister to George Bennett and Howard Bennett, but she died young.
Yeah, she was a Bennett, eh?
Yes.
And there's only one in their family, her family left, and that is Edna.
That's right. Yeah. She was upstanding.
Was she upstanding?
Oh, she comes to our place sometimes twice a week.
Well, she's what, up in her way, up in her 90s?
96.
Oh,
great. Emily died about a year ago.
Yeah.
And
Olive died.
Olive died.
10, 15 years ago?
No, it's not more than about 6 years ago.
Yeah? Oh.
Now, she was 93 when she died, and Emily was 94.
And old Dan was how old when he died?
98, going on 99.
You know, they always said that booze and cigarettes would kill you, but there was a man, and I can remember
the... Tell me anything about Dan.
I can remember the kid being down there with
Granddad.
I
sat up at night when we had to call the doctor, Campbell, Dan, go into what they call the blues.
Yeah.
And your boy is going to die. I have seen Dan Collins on the transfer. And I was working there, and I had the horses to look after and feed, the cow, and milk the cow, and work in the factory at the same time. And Dan would go into the booze, and he'd get drunk, and he'd stay drunk for 2 weeks, and he'd have whiskey hit all over. He'd get up through the middle of the night, and he would hunt and hunt and hunt to find the whiskey. But they'd have it hid, they'd find it in a hide where he wouldn't find it. And I've seen him just pull on his pants and a pair of shoes and just a coat and walk from Bradford to the home landing in the middle of the winter, middle of the night, to get a bottle of moonshine.
Yeah.
And it never hurt him a goddamn bit.
No.
Where you and I would have killed him. No, I'm not kidding you, Joe. That's the truth.
Well, once there...
Dr. Campbell, down there, Menzani, had to call him down there and get him fixed up to get him out of it. He either died, I think.
Well, when young Dan was around there and we were playing around as kids, I seen Dr. Campbell come down there.
I changed his diapers about that many times. Him and young Dorothy Campbell across the road. They're both about the same age, and they're both the
changes
of diapers for them. I changed them lots of times. Both Dorothy's and his.
I remember there once that old Dan there, Dr. Campbell, come down twice in one day to pump his stomach. He got into some bad booze or something from, I don't know whether.
Old Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He said that afterwards, he said it wasn't Tom Foster's booze. He said it was some of Graven's booze. He said that's what it was. Tom made the good stuff. The Graven made it. I had a laugh here once after war. He said to me, "You're busy." And I said, "No." He said, "Take me up to the 13th line." Well, Hill 60. And I couldn't figure what he wanted to go up the 13th line to Hill 60 for. But when I got up there, you remember the Forsythes and the Sador had a shack up there at the Sador and Forsythe. You remember had the shack up the railway track for the 13th line, just south of Archie Simpson's.
Oh, that was St. Cloud. I was there several times.
Forsythes and the, was there after.
Well, he could have been.
Yeah.
Just over the, there were little tracks and back in the bush.
Oh, no, this was right west of the railway tracks, right on 20.
I don't remember him. But Sank.
Well, he was the guy that came in once into the pool room of Ben, the old dad Brescu's there.
Yeah.
And it was dead winter and it was cold as 80s, and he always had a new pair of overalls on, bib overalls, and it was cold in the back room. So there he was playing pool, drunk as a hoot owl he was, and he picked up the old stove, and the stove pipe fell down and carried it back and sat alongside the pool.
From Lansing?
Big pardon?
Forsythe?
No, he was from up at the 13th line there, him and Sador there.
Oh,
and
what?
I think they went
his name Forsythe?
I thought it was Forsythe. Maybe I mixed up. Didn't he go into the battery business afterwards in Newmarket?
Didn't? I couldn't tell you.
They used to walk across back and forth across the river from Keswick. This Sador was with them. Sador and Forsythe.
There was quite a few store fights around the whole landing. One of them got damn near killed. Do you remember the time there was all that rustling going on at Beaton?
Yeah.
Well, Forsythe were mixed up in that.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And so
McDermott was in that.
In McDermott.
And Hicklin.
Yeah, Hicklin.
Hicklin, yeah. Well, wasn't it old... who was it that was... they had a war showed in about 25 or sometime like that on the railroad. Who was it that was coming? Wasn't it, Sank Low or something was coming down the railway tracks and spotted the
horse? Sank.
And
oh,
took
yeah.
his clothes off and
oh, yeah.
waved the train down and stopped
and down
flagged him down.
100 yards before he got to the Scanlon Street. Yeah, Sank.
Yeah, that was Sank.
Well, he used to watch the Branson from up there.
Yeah.
Watch down the railroad tracks. And boy, how he knew.
Yeah. And boy, could that man ever skate. I know when we were kids skating in the river, we used to try to follow strike. And he'd go on one skate about, I would say maybe 20, 25 feet, and he seemed to coast. And then he'd take off, yeah. And us kids trying to match him. Boy, he could skate. And he always skated with his hands behind his back.
Yeah,
he had the place, shack there just below Ben Collins on the west side of the river there in the big, what we call the big rice bed.
Did he?
Yeah.
He had it
there. Yeah, he had a place there.
We had the stables there, and we used to stable the horses in there. Maybe that was the same shack, I don't know.
Well, there was quite a boardwalk up along the side of it.
On the west side?
On the west side of the
well,
river.
That's where we were.
Yeah.
And, must have been
near
the
near the rear, what didn't they call it, Lowe's Creek or Sank's
that's
Creek
right,
or something?
That's
yeah.
right, that's
well,
the
that's
same
where
place.
It was.
You that's where we put the horses. That's where we, Dan's team, that's where we used to keep the horses overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, instead of fetching them back all the time.
Yeah. Oh, he was quite a character. I remember him as a kid in that. Well, he lived in that house up where Goodyear is now. Sank Low, Perch and Sank. Didn't they both live up there in that corner across from Kellycott's?
Perch, I don't know where Perch lived. He was up on the hill there someplace.
I think
when because he used to have a horse and buggy there. I remember him and Perch going past our place. I lived there where town where Bob Evans is now and then going past. And stopped talking to me one day, and they were both pretty tight then. Oh, Sank and
Perch. Yeah,
well, you know, they weren't bad fellas.
No, they weren't. They worked by heart. Well, Gordon Ogilvy tells me when his grandmother lived where McKnight's house is there now, that Sank and Perch and them, that I guess the grandfather died, I don't know, and she was there all alone, and she kept a couple of cows there. And they would say to her, now, Mrs. Ogilvy, they say, we got some good blue joint in the marsh. We'll bring in a load of blue joint for your cow for the winter.
Well, that was good feed.
We picked it in and wouldn't charge her nothing.
We, blue joint goes around the outside, not right out.
Yeah.
It was tall.
Yeah.
And we used to pile it up and salt it down, cut it, and make a big stack and sprinkle salt all through it. And say that was the best kind of cow feed you could have in winter time.
But I never, in my time, I never heard them call it blue joint, but evidently.
Blue joint?
Yeah.
You know what? We always called it blue joint.
I don't remember.
Then you got back out into the marsh. Mm-hmm. It didn't grow out there. It grew between that and the bush.
Oh, yeah.
On the outside of the marsh before you got into the bush.
And well, that's where all the cattle would be pasturing then. That's where
they were goddamn grass all that tall, all thick and good. Blue joint.
Yeah.
Sure. Many a pot full of ton of that I fed to the cows.
But they never used that for packing like they used the marché, did you?
No, you didn't use that at all for packing.
No.
They used to feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Did you ever do much fishing in the river there with Ben there when they were into the carp and that, or that was later, was it?
No, I never did much fishing that. Although, when I was with Ben, it was strictly against the rule that you never took any game fish.
Yeah, that's right.
But about 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, Ben would say, Billy,